Today is Monday, August the 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up today, Americans are in shock and horror after two mass shootings over the weekend that left a bloodbath with 29 people killed.
I ain't gonna never get those sounds out of my head of just the gunshots and then the people screaming and the trampling and just the fear, just really seeing fear like that.
With more countries defying the world by developing nuclear arsenals, experts fear we're heading for an arms war. Also ahead, why the extinction of butterflies is a concern for many other parts of the environment. It's all on today's International Edition.
8:30 dispatch. We got shots fired. We got multiple people down.
30 people died and dozens were wounded in two mass shootings within just hours, 13 hours of each other in the United States over the weekend, shocking the country and prompting calls from some politicians for tighter gun control. The first massacre occurred on Saturday morning in the heavily Hispanic border city of El Paso, Texas, where a gunman killed 20 people at a Walmart store before surrendering to police. And across the country, a gunman opened fire in a downtown district of Dayton, Ohio, early Sunday, killing 9 people and wounding at least 26 others. Police and the city mayor say the assailant was shot dead in that event by police. VOA's Michael Sullivan has more.
U.S. President Donald Trump tweeted that the shootings at Walmart in Texas Saturday were a tragedy and act of cowardice. Democrats Nancy Pelosi and former Vice President Joe Biden said action must be taken to stop the violence.
Lord, have mercy.
As El Paso mourned and searched for answers, another shooting shook Ohio.
And then the people screaming and the trampling and just the fear.
Officials say police responded in less than a minute, killing the gunman in the entertainment district and saving many lives. His sister was one of the victims.
That work and that bravery by our first responders is something that moves me to get up every morning to continue to do this work.
The nation had been reeling from shootings last Sunday when a gunman shot 3 and injured more than a dozen in Gilroy, California, before taking his own life. The motives in California and Ohio are unclear, but in Texas, as people grieved on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border, authorities say the shooter may have targeted Hispanics.
It has a nexus at this point in time to a hate crime. The FBI will be looking into that with the other federal authorities.
Mental illness, assault weapons, extremism can play a role in mass shootings, which now occur in the United States at the rate of more than one a day. It's becoming an issue in the presidential campaign.
And yes, it's the gun laws. Yes, it's the universal background checks. And yes, we should stop selling weapons of war into our communities. But I think we also have to confront this hatred that I have never seen in my lifetime.
As people in El Paso line up to donate blood, the city is preparing for 20 funerals and another 9 in Dayton, posing many questions with few answers. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Well, these two horrifying scenes within 13 hours of each other and carnage that shocked the country has become grimly accustomed to mass shootings. Speaking to reporters as he departed New Jersey Sunday to return to the White House, President Trump said he's already speaking with the Attorney General, FBI Director, and others about how to stop mass shootings in the country. And he praised the quick response of law enforcement.
They were right on the ball in El Paso. They were there so quickly, and in Dayton in less than a minute. Think of the damage he did. In such a short period of time, in less than a minute, the law enforcement acted and killed him.
Well, authorities in Texas said the rampage appeared to be a racially motivated hate crime targeted at Mexican immigrants, and federal prosecutors are treating it as a case of domestic terrorism. Trump also said that hate has no place in our country and called it a mental health issue that needs to be resolved.
We've done actually a lot. But perhaps more has to be done. But this is also a mental illness problem. If you look at both of these cases, this is mental illness. These are really people that are very, very seriously mentally ill.
Democratic candidates spoke out quickly about the need for gun law reforms. Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown says Congress has a chance to pass legislation that would require background checks on anyone buying a gun.
My next thought was anger at our country and society and our Congress for not doing anything about this.
Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke, who used to represent the El Paso in Congress, tells reporters the issue goes way beyond just guns.
The open racism and intolerance and hatred that we are seeing throughout this country being echoed and trafficked in by the president of the United States, who encourages this kind of hatred, and as a result, this kind of violence must be stopped.
Authorities said they are examining a manifesto from the suspect that indicated there is a potential nexus to a hate crime. A four-page statement posted on a message board online, often used by extremists and believed to have been written by the suspect, called the Walmart attack, quote, a response to the, quote, Hispanic invasion of Texas. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. The new U.S. defense chief slams China on the first Asian visit. Hong Kong protesters refine their tactics amid the latest violence. And Turkey's president is readying an offensive in the Kurdish area of northern Syria. Sudanese protesters have signed a power-sharing deal with the military. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Iranian forces have seized yet another ship in the Persian Gulf. AP correspondent Sarah Bassett reports.
State media say seven crew members were detained when the ship was seized on Wednesday for allegedly carrying 185,000 gallons of smuggled fuel from Iran. It marks the Revolutionary Guard's third seizure of a vessel in recent weeks and the latest show of strength amid a spike in regional tensions. No further details on the vessel or the nationality of the crew have been provided. Iranian media reported last month that some 1.8 million gallons of government-subsidized Iranian fuel are smuggled daily to other countries where prices are much higher. I'm Sarah Bassett.
Well, as North Korea and Iran appear to be ramping up their nuclear weapons capability, the U.S. also recently withdrew from a nuclear treaty with Russia and is preparing to test a new missile. There are growing concerns now that it is the beginning of a nuclear arms race. Joining us to talk more about this is Dr. William Parker, CEO of the East-West Institute. What do you think is happening here?
Well, I think there's a couple things going on here that makes this situation very complicated. You have nuclear weapons being developed and expanded in North Korea. You have nuclear capability, which is potentially expanding in Iran. Right now, they at least have low-enriched uranium, and that could expand. And then you have the issue of both Russia and the United States with the vast majority of the nuclear weapons with the intercontinental ballistic missile and submarine-launched ballistic missile capabilities of the world between those two countries. And so a continued conversation, any continued ability to say we are going to somehow follow the strategic arms reductions talk or something like that is absolutely critical, just as it's critical to figure out a way to reduce or eliminate the production of nuclear weapons in Iran.
It's interesting because we've got Iran that the U.S. or the Trump administration seems very concerned about their potential nuclear capabilities in the future. But we pulled out of a deal that by all appearances looked like they were complying with not doing such a thing. And it looks like now that's reversed.
So it's interesting. So the 2015 deal with Iran basically capped uranium enrichment to about 3.67% impurity. And what that means is it was low enriched uranium. So that was suitable for producing fuel for nuclear power reactors, but not for weapons of mass destruction, unless you got to the point where you had 1,050 kilograms of low enriched uranium to make the core of one weapon. So then after that, Iran would have had to take that and further enrich it to about 90% purity. And they would do that, and what they would end up with is about 25 kilograms of highly enriched uranium, which would give them the quote, the bomb. So there were a lot of steps left there to do that. Now, prior to 2015, the Iranians had agreed that they had about 10,000 kilograms of low enriched uranium, and they were required to move that, to ship that out of the country, 98% of that out of the country. And so there was this deal, JCPOA, and some thought it was a good deal, some thought it wasn't, but it was a deal of some sort which appeared to at least slow that process. Now, there are people, both Republicans, Democrats, people in the U.S. and outside, that believe that the Iranians were cheating on that. And if they were, then there are ways to go in and verify that. Now, IAEA came in and said that they didn't think they were cheating on it. Others felt that they were, and the intelligence services and that. So that leaves you with the situation of, do you continue to maintain the deal or you don't? Well, we know what ended up happening there, and the United States walked away from that deal. And so now we are trying to work this from a series of other efforts throughout, I will call it, the instruments of national power, from the diplomatic to the military side to the financial side, et cetera, to say, we do not see any way it is acceptable for you to build a nuclear weapon from Iran. So now the Iranians, of course, are responding by puffing out their chests a little bit. And now you have a potential oil tanker war going on, similar to what happened 28 years ago. So there's a potential for this to spin out of control very quickly in the Gulf if things don't quiet down.
Given that we're hearing so much about all of this with nuclear North Korea, potentially Iran and elsewhere, how concerned are you right now about the fact that it would appear that we're starting a nuclear arms race? Is that what you see?
I'm more concerned now than I have been for a very long time. I'm concerned because it appears that there is more fissile material being developed, that there is more highly enriched uranium being developed around the globe. And if that happens and you have more nuclear countries out there, the possibility, even if it's not a country that does it, the possibility of losing access to that or control of that fissile material, which ends up being an explosion of some sort in a major city around the globe, United States or otherwise, has catastrophic results. The concern is it's not just the nuclear side of the house, but it's the missile technology. It's the other weapons technology. It's the inability to trust each other because the capability is so high now of harming so many of our fellow citizens.
All right, Dr. William Parker, he is the CEO of the East-West Institute. Thank you for being with us. A third death caused by Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo has sparked concerns in the neighboring countries and a temporary closure of the border by neighboring Rwanda. The Ebola epidemic in the eastern part of the Central African country is entering its second year after claiming more than 1,800 lives. The World Health Organization says it's boosting measures to prevent the spread of Ebola across the border. VOA's Latika Hoke reports.
Health authorities in the Democratic Republic of the Congo are searching for the people who have been in contact with the three Ebola patients who have died in Goma, the capital of the northern Kivu province. The density of the population in an urban setting, the anonymity and high mobility make the search harder.
So yes, we find all the contacts we think we know of, but there are people who hide their illness, who flee, who go to another place, who think that being taken to the Ebola treatment center is like being taken to the death house.
Health officials say the Ebola treatment centers provide patients with a high standard of care and understanding.
They really do their utmost to look after people in a very caring and special way. They keep a survivor in the room at all times with the person who has Ebola so that they know they have someone who really understands what they're going through.
The World Health Organization has stressed the importance of people's cooperation.
Nothing can be done without a committed population, which is why we train people identified by the community to be able to detect suspected cases of Ebola at the community level and also to undertake preventive interventions.
The third reported case of Ebola in Goma, which is close to the border with Rwanda, led to a temporary closure of the border on Thursday.
I'm really praying that they will open this border so that I can go to work in Rwanda, where I have a job. I can't understand why they don't just test us instead of closing these borders.
The United Nations has advised against closing the borders because people who need to cross will find another way and more likely spread the virus.
This is actually not helpful at all if a border is closed, in part because there's really good economic links, but also family links on either side of these borders.
The World Health Organization has hundreds of Ebola experts in the region and says it is bolstering measures to prevent and treat Ebola in the neighboring countries, especially Rwanda, Burundi, Uganda, and South Sudan, which are most at risk. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
And you are listening to International Edition on VOA.
Voices. We're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA newsfeed. voanews.com.
VOA's International Edition continues. 48 insects are currently included on the U.S. endangered species list, and the only way an insect has ever been removed from that list is through extinction. This is especially troubling for the world's butterfly populations, which have declined by 20% over the last decades. Erica Celeste visited one of the rarest wild butterfly populations in the world, the Mitchell's Sayer butterfly at the Sarit Nature Center in Benton Harbor, Michigan.
This morning we're going to head off down into the wetland, into a very specific kind of wetland called the prairie fen.
This time of year, you can often find Nate Fuller counting butterflies. The director of the Sarit Nature Center needs an accurate count of the Mitchell's Sayer butterflies to help preserve one of the last known habitats.
They're very particular in the kind of habitat where they can live, which is part of what makes them so rare and amazing indicators for our water quality.
We emerge into a vast wetland of soupy ground covered in shoulder-high grasses and sedges, dotted with poisonous sumac trees. It's slow going, but a cell phone app helps keep track of where the butterflies have been spotted, as well as when and how many. All important data for better understanding Mitchell's Sayer populations. Finding the small brown butterflies with golden-ringed eye spots on their wings can be difficult. There just aren't many around. They also rest with their wings closed to blend in with their surroundings.
We can step over this way. There's a chance we might stir up a Mitchell's Sayer.
The Mitchell's Sayer was placed on the endangered species list in 1991. Initially, it was thought that the loss of wetlands contributed to their decline.
What we knew them from were spring-fed wetlands. So the assumption was that it was a case of invasive plant species, humans destroying wetlands, draining, dredging them.
But as habitats were restored, the Mitchell's Sayer continued to decline. Fuller says environmentalists realized something more complicated was at work.
The clues seem to suggest that it's not just habitat availability, it's groundwater. And the amount and the quality of groundwater coming into these wetlands seem to be a challenge for the butterfly.
While the decline is likely due to a combination of factors, the fact that the water quality might contribute is unsettling because the wetlands are the headwaters for the Midwest's rivers and streams. A captive breeding program was started 4 years ago at the Toledo Zoo to get to the bottom of the mystery. Ryan Walsh is its director.
So we're starting a captive colony. We'll occasionally collect them to add new genetics to the captive population. And we can really breed a large number of the butterflies. The rest of them, the ones that won't be left back for captive breeding, will be released out into the wild.
The caterpillars spend the winter in a special weather-controlled chamber. That helped determine that the Mitchell satyrs don't do well below 4.4 degrees Celsius, the temperature at which hard freezes in the fen wetlands will kill the insects. With that knowledge, the program produced 1,300 new eggs this year, something that may go a long way toward restoring the population, and may one day earn the butterflies a ticket off the endangered species list. Meanwhile, back at the Nature Center, our luck isn't so great. In 2 hours, we've only spotted 3 Mitchell satyrs. But Nate Fuller says, if anything, that's a good reason to continue building the breeding program.
I mean, why should we care? We should care because they're indicators of there's something wrong with our landscape. You know, whether it's water quality, water quantity, is it habitat? But sort of the bigger picture about, do we care about creation? Do we care about, you know, the world we live in? The idea of caring about the land so that the land can care for us in return.
For VOA News, I'm Erica Celeste in Benton Harbor, Michigan.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers have found an exoplanet that can be described as hotter than hot. Called WASP-121b, the planet is so hot that scientists say they have detected magnesium and iron gas streaming into space from its atmosphere instead of condensing into metallic clouds. Not only is it shedding elements heavier than hydrogen and helium, but the planet also orbits so close to its host star that its upper atmosphere temperature reaches over 2,500 degrees Celsius. The star's gravitational pull is so strong that the planet has been stretched to look like an American football and is said to be on the edge of being ripped apart. WASP-121b was discovered in 2015, is about 900 light-years from Earth, and located in the constellation Puppis. A study detailing the astronomers' findings has been published in the Astronomical Journal. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Well, for our music segment today, we just want to offer our deepest condolences and prayers for strength to all the families and victims of the 2 mass shootings here in the United States over the weekend. We say, let's choose love over hate, light over darkness, faith over despair, and acceptance over tolerance.
Your soul to bleed. Some say love, it is a hunger, an endless.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
It's the heart afraid of breaking that never I never
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $7 million for information leading to the identification or location of Salman Rauf Salman, also known as Samuel Salman Al-Rayda. He is a key leader of the terrorist organization Hezbollah. Salman is most well known for his prominent role in the July 18, 1994 bombing of the Argentine Jewish Mutual Aid Society, a Jewish community center in Buenos Aires, Argentina, which resulted in the deaths of 85 innocent civilians. Salman is a leader of Hezbollah's external security organization, which is responsible for planning, coordinating, and executing Hezbollah terrorist attacks around the globe. At the recently concluded Western Hemisphere Counterterrorism Ministerial, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that Salman poses an ongoing threat.
He continues today to conduct terrorism on behalf of Hezbollah. The United States Department of Treasury has designated Salman as a specially designated global terrorist, and we believe this action will deny him all access to the U.S. financial system. We want this killer brought to justice.
The Rewards for Justice program is administered by the U.S. Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service. Since its inception in 1984, the program has paid in excess of $150 million to more than 100 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. If anyone has information about Salman Rauf Salman, please contact the Rewards for Justice website at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email lh@rewardsforjustice.net or the regional security officer at the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate. All information will be kept strictly confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series. Education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
This is VOA News.